Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today is Antonio Banderas' 60th birthday. And for his birthday, what did he get? He got coronavirus. He put on Twitter he made it public today, August 10th, that he is forced to celebrate his 60th birthday in quarantine. He's been tested for the 19 and has the coronavirus. And I wish him well. I really do. Also today, we had our president who said that we must stop politicizing the virus. Must stop doing that. Can't make it political. No. And if it weren't for those damn Chinese. Yeah. Again, I gotta wonder if he actually hears the words that come out of his mouth. And here to share some thoughts on the words that do come out of his mouth, I've asked back our good friend Propane Jane. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So we gotta stop politicizing it, and then we politicize it.
He's only saying that because he looks bad, and he's incompetent, and everybody knows it, and he's getting the blame for how poorly he's responded to the crisis.
Because he kind of is the blame.
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, I think enough time has elapsed. You know, in the beginning, you know, the first month or two, you know, they were sort of still saying, give him a chance. You can't really blame this on him. It came from somewhere else. And they let it get out of control, et cetera, et cetera. But now, I mean, so many months into this, it's clear that he's botching the response and that he's very arrogantly doing it and,
yep.
And you know, feels like he's still doing the right thing. And it's like he said at the beginning, way back in March, I don't take responsibility for this at all. He doesn't take responsibility for anything.
No,
so
of course not.
It's just not going to happen.
No, in fact, you know, everyone knows the emperor has no clothing on.
Yeah.
Because the National Review, the very conservative National Review, wrote of Trump that he's thin-skinned, self-obsessed, small-minded, intellectually lazy, and ill-disciplined. They go on to say these never seem to be great qualities for a chief executive, but they have caught up with Trump over the last 6 months. In particular, they have played into his poor handling of the coronavirus crisis and the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd. When times become more serious, he remained as unserious as ever. And that's the National Review saying that. That's not you or me. That's something I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty proud of him. That's pretty darn good. I mean, but what else can you say in this moment? I think if you are, again, this like non-modern day Republican and you were around for previous Republican administrations, they, yes, screwed up a lot of things, but understood that there was a PR attached to screwing up and that you can actually, you know, sugarcoat it and paper it over. And that the American people are willing to grant you some grace if you can admit, okay, this wasn't the best we could have done, and here's what we're going to do instead. I mean, clearly, we all lived through George W. Bush, 9/11, the Iraq War. I don't necessarily think they did a great job of papering over what they did. But at the same time, they at least gave the pretense of taking it seriously and having a plan. And they were saying, okay, we have this plan. And even though the plan wasn't working out great, they still had a plan. Trump actually doesn't have a plan. His plan is actually to just act like the crisis isn't even happening. The pandemic isn't happening. Everything can go back to the way it was. And that's actually what's making things worse because so many people who follow him and idolize him have bought into that same delusion and are putting themselves more and more at risk. Because they won't obey any of the social distancing guidelines. They won't wear masks. They are adamantly refusing to wear masks as though, you know, this is their God-given right and their freedom is being taken away. So with all of those circumstances together, I mean, it's clear that what he's doing has actually made it worse than just if he had been, you know, relatively not very smart like previous Republican administration.
Yeah. He surrounded himself with the best people, you know,
yeah.
just the best people. And I found it interesting that, you know, this evangelical, this big conservative evangelical looked at Pence and said that Pence has been a, what was the word? A very supportive, submissive wife.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Which I thought was an accurate assessment.
Well, it's an accurate assessment, but it's pretty emasculating.
Well, yeah. Come on.
I mean, it's pretty emasculating, and I just find it ironic in the context of all of this conversation about who Joe Biden is going to pick for his vice president, the fact that it's going to be a woman and all this dialogue about women being too ambitious and, you know, not shouldn't be reaching for this ceiling because, uh-oh, they may be, you know, be in a position to become the president, whereas Mike Pence gets to be this submissive figure to Trump, and that's, like, something that they suddenly revere. I mean, that doesn't fit with who they were supposed to be, the quote-unquote daddy party all the way around. I mean, I don't necessarily know that it helps them for Mike Pence to be this person who just cowers in the corner and allows Trump to get away with the things he gets away with. I think the case that people are wanting to make for whoever Joe Biden picks is that that person would be there, theoretically, to say, hey, you know, maybe this isn't the best decision. Maybe we should go in a different direction. You would want somebody who could be confronted and challenged when they weren't making the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of crazy though when you look at these evangelicals. You know, that same during that same period where this, and I'm not going to go into who these people are. They're a bunch of, they don't deserve any promotion. They're just crazy. You know, but they're talking about, you know, they believe that, you know, Christianity can be lost in a generation and only Donald Trump can save it. And, you know, just this really crazy stuff.
Yes.
And you know, these are the anti-gay, these are the homophobes. And
yeah.
You know, when I read this, I'm going from a homophobe, you know, aren't you basically calling Mike Pence gay?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's what I'm saying. They are totally, I think, in many ways, this role that they are envisioning for him as a submissive wife. Even if you're going with the teachings of Christianity, that wife is supposed to be a helpmate. She's supposed to be like a moral compass that walks the man back from doing these things that he theoretically shouldn't be doing. And so just the hypocrisy of the fact that if you're going to speak on the grounds of morality, I mean, again, we have this man who's cheated on multiple wives, who is known, you know, well known now for being a you-know-what grabber, has been accused of sexual assault by numerous women. It's beyond the teens. It's like 20, 21 women who've accused him of this. So ultimately, I think, you know, the corruption, the sociopathic behavior that he's just exhibited as president, that's not even speaking to what he's done as Trump in his businesses, the way that he's, you know, robbed, stolen, lied, committed fraud. I mean, none of that actually speaks to this image of Christianity, not even that, like, what's in the Bible explicitly, but also not what the family values of the quote-unquote religious right have put forward this whole time. I mean, that's the contradiction that I think is leading these Republicans, again, the not modern-day Republicans who remember yesteryear. It's leading them to a point where they have to speak out and they have to denounce this because they know with every fiber of their being that this is contradictory and it threatens to burn the whole establishment down just on the fact that they have no credibility. They don't stand for anything.
Yeah. Now, Scaramucci came out the other day and said that that the Republicans are the minority party now. And, you know, I'm going, well, I don't really care what you got to say there, Tony, but okay, I thought that in 2008, too, that we'd never hear from the Republican Party again. But it seems they're playing, you know, back to the old playbook. They're burning everything down in the hopes that if Biden is elected in January, for the next 2 years, he's going to spend all of his time cleaning up their mess.
Right.
And in 2 years, we're going to end up with, you know, another 2010, another crazy, you know, iteration of the Tea Party. And we're gonna be right back where we started from.
Right. I mean, I think even just theoretically, the Republican Party has always been stronger in opposition and in the minority status because all they get to do is just obstruct.
Right.
They don't actually know how to run a government properly, and they don't believe in running a government properly, right? I mean, they want to drown it in a bathtub. So in that sense, it makes sense for them to play this obstructionist role. But the problem is, like you said, that once they become the minority, it's like everything flips, and then all of the political media, everything that's in the news is centered around their viewpoint and how, you know, everybody should just be upset with the leadership, you know, the Democratic leadership, because they're not moving fast enough, or they're putting in too many things to help people we quote unquote don't want to help, et cetera. So I think that we have to be prepared for that, because we already know that's what they're going to do. And I think just ahead of time, we need to be thinking like, you know, I always just think back to 2008 and how we wanted the stimulus to be like $1 trillion at least.
Yep.
And what did it come out? It was like $787 billion or something. And
half of it
like,
was tax cuts, and that I thought were, you know, not the right way to go. And I wanted, you know, like you wanted much chunkier. I wanted even bigger than a trillion. I wanted to actually start talking about, you know, maybe a $2 trillion infrastructure bill to catch up on what the American Society of Civil Engineers were saying at the time we needed, which would
exactly.
have been a huge influx and would have jump-started our economy. But again, Democrats, you know, gave in, and they allowed it to be, you know, much less stimulative, and it took us longer for the economy to heat up.
Yeah, and I think in this moment, what's different is that even though that was a huge crisis in 2008, this is now a way bigger crisis. I mean, it's unfathomable that we could have ended up in a worse situation, but I think the detriment that will have been done by the time the new government, you know, takes over, it will be so bad that I think it would be criminal not to give it almost more than what it actually needs,
right,
just in anticipation of what the fallout is going to continue to be for years and years to come. I think for certain our healthcare system is going to have to be shored up just because of the mounting cost of treating the pandemic as it is. I mean, these ICU stays, et cetera, we haven't even gotten to talking about how much it's costing us in real time. We're solely focusing on the economy and jobs lost and money in people's pockets, but I don't necessarily think we're really even accounting for the loss piece accurately yet. So I think we should shoot for the moon.
No, absolutely. But that ultimately is going to come back to getting the Senate. I mean,
yeah,
you can't have divided government, because, look, we couldn't get a stimulus package put forth right now that are going to help people right now who are struggling, because you have people like Ron Johnson, who is actively hoping that talks completely blow up, that nothing stimulative gets done, that we fund no more help for people who are struggling. And we end up with Trump coming out with four executive orders, which aren't going to be helpful. I mean,
right,
this was purely a political stunt to say, hey, I care about you, and try and make the Democrats look bad. But you've got the Republicans in Johnson right out in front saying, I hope nothing happens. Screw those people. Let them suffer.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to keep saying that because I think they feel like that's consistent with what their donors and their voters are wanting to hear right now. So, I mean, that's the gamble that they're making right now. They're hoping that they can continue to stand by this statement and enough of their voters won't die or get, you know, severely ill between now and November, and that they'll still go ahead and support this and want to keep putting it into office. But I do think that that's, again, it is a gamble, because while you let it fester and you let it get worse and worse, you don't actually know at what point is it going to hit a breaking point. Is it going to be now that schools are reopening and things start to actually filter out into the communities that have been so brazenly obstinate and defiant about the guidelines, who haven't wanted to wear a mask, who are tired of having their kids at home and just want to be comfortable again and want to send their kids to school? But is that going to be the moment where, oh, crap, however many teachers have it, okay, now a teacher has died, now a principal has died,
yeah,
now some parents have died. And what is that going to look like in these communities that have been telling themselves still to this point that it's a hoax and that they're not going to get it?
Yeah, I mean, look at Major League Baseball. We can't keep Major League Baseball afloat. And these are multi-million dollar athletes with a billion dollar industry, billions of dollars of industry behind them to go, no, just stay safe. Just stay in your little bubble, play in stadiums with no one there. And they still can't keep it out.
Exactly. And so, I think that's why Trump is in this position where, you know, he wants to say, let's not point fingers, because when you look at all of the experiments, all of the things people are actively doing in trying to get back to normal, you actually see what happens in that process. It's like a trial and error. And even in the best of conditions, they're still not able to completely, you know, eliminate the risk. And that's because, again, you have to just go back to science. We don't have immunity to this thing. We don't have a vaccine for this thing yet. And we haven't necessarily slowed down the transmission.
Yeah.
The expectation that something just magically different is going to be the case when we wake up every day is just not reality-based.
Yeah, well, you know, it's summertime. It'll just go away magically. And, you know, look, hey, the cases are down. You know, we had under 50,000 on Sunday, under 50,000 new cases. That's a huge drop. Maybe we're heading down.
Well, I mean, in Trump's world, there's always a maybe, right? I mean, he always is going to make room for a delusion that makes him seem like he's doing a good job and everything is not a disaster.
Or, you know, my thought was, or maybe we've just stopped testing as many people because of all the shenanigans that a lot of these states are playing. And that's the weird world that I'm in, is that now they've done such a good job that there's almost no one that I trust at this moment to give accurate information, because they've so badly perverted most institutions in this country.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, and I said this months ago, the tale will be told in the obituaries, in the morgues, in the cemeteries, in the hospitals, the family members that are going to remember their dead. They're going to remember their sick. Their friends are going to remember. People are posting, people are wanting to make it known that they've been impacted by this. You tweeted out that obituary a couple of weeks ago from that family in Texas. And I think that we're going to continue to see that, because the more determined they are to suppress the information or to obfuscate on the facts, all that does is make people who are seeking the truth and seeking justice become, you know, more adamant in the other direction. So I don't think they're going to be successful. Yes, it may take some time for us to fully get an accurate count, but I think that's why he's trying so hard in the short term to muddy the waters and put forward this alternative reality, because he knows ultimately when it comes out in the wash, again, the blood is on his hands.
Yeah, but muddy the waters he does. And I look at the, you know, the voting part of this, you know, mail-in ballots are all, you know, it's all fraudulent, it's all going to be a ripoff. But in Florida, you should vote by mail. And then you see the guy who's, you know, the chairman of the Republican Party in San Diego County, who, you know, he was right in there with the, it's all a ripoff. It's fraught with danger. Here's a guy who's voted by mail 22 times.
Wow.
And you go, that level of hypocrisy is just, it's mind blowing, but you know, they're on board with it. And this is my concern, is that, you know, maybe they don't care about the election because they know that they're going to block most people's ability to vote. And since a lot of, you know, Democrats have already signed up to vote by mail, maybe you just have them all chucked out and they win by just everything back in the court system like 2000.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly is a possibility. And I think that's why, you know, we've been screaming and shouting about the restoration of the VRA needing to happen for years now. Our votes are not protected. Our election system is not protected. And all the Republican Party has done since, you know, election 2016 is do everything they can to allow our system to be vulnerable to their manipulation and also to manipulation from our adversaries abroad. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that's what they want to do, because they end up winning. But at the same time, you know, I think this situation where, in a very childish, small-minded way, they are, again, very obviously targeting these efforts at red states versus blue states or blue states versus red states. But I think their lack of doing that in a state like Texas, a state like Georgia, a state like Florida, it presumes a lot of the Republican base and the Republican Party. It presumes that everyone who previously voted for Trump as a Republican is going to still stay in his corner. and that he can kind of lay off of these red states and just target all of this effery at blue states. But I think there's this possibility, a dark horse possibility, in that the very Republican voters that he thinks are going to be in his corner, a lot of them are going to defect.
Right.
You know, and this expectation that, okay, if I don't mess with the red states, if you let us just go free and do whatever, because I guarantee you, we voted on new voting machines. When I did the primary runoff in July, I was on a different machine than I was on when I voted back on Super Tuesday in March. Okay, and what I voted on recently seems way more secure than what I voted on in the last couple of decades.
How so?
Last 2 decades in Texas. Well, previously, all you had was a computer. You didn't get any sort of printout that actually showed you what vote went into the system. Now it's actually spitting out a paper printout that has all of my choices. I can verify that that's what was taken. And then it had this big, secure, look like a trash can, kind of like big recycling thing that is clearly locked. And it was a lockbox, and you went and dropped that paper ballot into that box.
That's what I've been asking for over a decade now.
Exactly. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, I have it in the state of Texas. And sure, it's quiet as kept. It's not something that they're waving a flag and saying, hey, we're doing this. But as I've been saying since March, I feel like there are a lot of moneyed Republicans, these oil and gas Republicans, who've lost a lot in a state like Texas. And they may not want to break the 11th commandment and speak out against Trump and speak out against the direction the party has taken. You know, they'll do it anonymously. They'll do it in these, you know, very, very keenly worded op-eds. But I think a lot of the way they want to show their dissatisfaction and their disappointment and actually render some punishment is by going in that booth and voting for Joe Biden. And I think that's why the numbers are tilting in the direction they are for Texas and a couple of other states that really theoretically should be safe states for Trump right now.
Yeah, I'm hoping Walter Mondale will be very happy on election day.
I hope so too. I hope a lot of us will be very happy.
I'm hoping Mondale will be very happy. It's just how it is. Finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on what's going on in Chicago. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news that's coming out of there. I've got people, you know, yelling at me that, you know, Trump was right. We should have sent in, you know, federal troops and quashed that and all of that. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I mean, it's like I said again a couple of months ago. The unrest is not going to calm down. No justice, no peace. I don't think that in a situation where you have the pandemic raging, you have people out of work, you have police brutality still, you know, percolating right along and nobody stepping in to actually put any definitive zero tolerance policy across the country, and these incidents still happening, and again, social media still being there to broadcast all of it to the masses, I think that as people get more and more desperate, as they're out of work, as they don't have food on the table, they don't have money, yes, violence is going to go up, the protests are going to go up, the aggression of the police is going to go up, the aggression of the citizenry is going to go up. This is the chaos, this is the civil unrest that we see happening around the world, and we think, well, we're too good for this. This can happen in any city around America. It was just happening in Portland.
Right.
So I don't think whether it's Chicago, I mean, I know Chicago, they love to pick on Chicago, but I think this could be the case in any American city on any given day because of just the circumstances that we're in. As Trump said, it just is what it is. Yeah. I mean, I hate to be that gloom and doom about it, but this is where we are. You have to have better leadership than this. And you have to have, you know, some awareness that your cities are going to break down if you don't have a coherent federal policy on anything.
And do you think Biden helped? I know he can't be any worse, but what does Biden do to help this?
I think him not agitating the situation helps tremendously. I think him having people in place that understand these dynamics. Again, like you said, I mean, everybody that's in this administration is an idiot. They're a lackey. They're there because they were, you know, they paid into his campaign some way, or they paid him a favor in some other way that we don't even know about yet, or they were just put there by our foreign adversaries. So, I mean, even just having competent people at staffed at in all of these agencies, think about all of the brain drain that's happened at all of these federal agencies over the last 3.5 years. You would think that a lot of those people would want to come back and work their jobs and clean up the mess, as we've been saying. So I think that's a number one. I think diversity in the administration is going to be important. Putting people there, women, people of color, immigrants, people who understand what the struggle is for the masses. Closing the concentration camps. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that I think would overall change the social dynamics, and you would hope that policy behind that, with having a majorities in both houses of Congress, that you would have policy to back up the social dynamic, and then we could actually make change that people could feel, and hopefully that would calm some of this tension down.
Yeah. So are you on the defund the police bandwagon or not?
I'm on the reappropriate funds from the police. Dispatch the funds more in a more egalitarian way that is not, you know, lifting up racial profiling and police brutality. If ultimately we're paying into this system so that they can, you know, cover people's butts when they kill people in these civil suits, if it's going to continue to pay pensions of people that routinely murder people and just get shuffled around to other departments, I'd like that money to be spent on something different. I'd love for the police to be used in more useful ways. I think we need them, but I think a lot of the money they're getting, particularly the money that's put into militarizing them and having them become a goon Gestapo, I don't think they should be getting more money for that. But again, I think we have to be eloquent about how we discuss it, and we can't get caught up, I think, in this soundbite culture where we're not actually talking about what the issue is. We're just talking about a three-word soundbite that stirs up people's emotions.
Yeah, excellent point. Excellent point. Jane, as always, great talking with you. I appreciate the time. I look forward to our next discussion.
You too. Have a great week and be safe.
You as well. Our good friend Propane Jane, a very popular Twitter commentator. You can follow her on Twitter at DocRockTex26. One of my favorite folks there as well. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.